Grant from True West, presenting An Evening with the Wood Brothers, featuring Chris Wood of Medeski, Martin, and Wood, touring in support of their new album, Paradise. The Wood Brothers perform Friday, March 10th at the Crystal Ballroom in Portland. Tickets on sale now. You are listening to KBOO Portland. The time is 8:59. Up next is Veterans Voice.
KBOO Community Radio is a proud co-sponsor of the Portland Eco Film Festival, Thursday through Sunday, October 20th through 23rd, at the Hollywood Theater in Portland. The Portland Eco Film Festival is the premier environmental film festival in the United States Pacific Northwest, showing the very best films about nature, the environment, outdoor pursuits, and eco-conscious living. Films that will be shown include Seed, The Untold Story, Silent Running, Saving Jamaica Bay, and many more. Again, that's the Portland Eco Film Festival, Thursday through Sunday, October 20th through 23rd, at the Hollywood Theater, 4122 Northeast Sandy Boulevard in Portland. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage, under Community Events.
Good morning, you're tuned to KBOO Portland. Coming up this morning on KBOO, Veterans Voices first with Angie and Marvin. Today they welcome former drone technician Sean Westmoreland to talk about the harsh realities of drone warfare. At 10 o'clock, it's Air Cascadia, headlines, interviews, and commentary with Chris Andre. At 10:15, hear Flashpoints. Dennis Bernstein speaks with former FBI Special Agent Colleen Rowley about the dangers of proposed Clinton policy in Syria. And at 11 o'clock, Robin Shanti speaks with Dale Borgum, director of the Living Dying Project, and Betsy Toll, founder, director of Living Earth, about healing at the edge, practices for living and dying. And we thank you, KBOO members, for your generous support. You're not a current member, you can become one by going to kboo.fm and clicking where it says donate. And we thank you for doing that. And Veterans Voice is coming right up. It's 9:03.
He's 5'2" and he's 6'4". He fights with missiles and with spears. He's all of 31 and he's only 17. He's been a soldier for 1,000 years. He's a Catholic, a Hindu, an atheist, a Jain, a Buddhist and a Baptist and a Jew. And he knows he shouldn't kill, and he knows he always will kill you for me, my friend, and me for you. And he's fighting for Canada, he's fighting for France, he's fighting for the USA. And he's fighting for the Russians, and he's fighting for Japan, and he thinks we'll put an end to war this way. And he's fighting for democracy, he's fighting for the Reds, he says it's for the peace of all. He's the one who must decide who's to live and who's to die, and he never sees the writing on the wall. But without him, how would Hitler have condemned him at Lobau? Without him, Caesar would have stood alone. He's the one who gives his body as a weapon of the war, and without him, all this killing can't go on. He's the universal soldier, and he really is to blame. His orders come from far away no more. They come from here and there, and you and me. And brothers, can't you see? This is not the way we put the end to war.
Welcome to Veterans Voice Radio Show on KBOO 90.7 FM here in Portland and the Oregon Coast, 91.9 FM Hood River and the Columbia River Gorge, plus 104.3 FM Corvallis and the Willamette Valley. And you can also hear this great station at www.kboo.fm. And if you go on the webpage, you can put that in, kboo.fm/veteransvoice, and you can hear some of our older shows. And I'm Marvin, and I'm here with Angie.
Good morning.
Our guest today is going to be Sean Westmoreland. He served in the Air Force at Kandahar Air Base in Afghanistan, and he's going to talk about the drone program that's going on around the world, but he's going to talk about it in Afghanistan and his experience with it, and that should be pretty interesting. Right now he's in Standing Rock, and we're trying to get a hold of him, so he's doing some good work there too. So we got a few announcements we're going to say. Angie, got anything you want to say?
Yeah, good morning. There is a special Veterans Day offering for veterans, active duty, and family members, and it has to do with free body work. That is going to be Friday, November 11th from 7 to 9:30 p.m. at the DAYA Foundation, 5210 Southwest Corbett. That is some free body work by licensed massage therapists and energy healers. That, again, is Friday, November 11th from 7 to 9:30 p.m., and that is free to veterans active duty and their families. And there is a, if you cannot make that one, there is another one on Sunday, November 13th. Free craniosacral therapy. It is a gentle form of body work that releases restrictions in the cranial sacral system to enhance sleep and well-being, as well as to decrease symptoms of stress, anxiety, insomnia, headaches, and traumatic brain injury, and our favorite PTSD. and that's co-sponsored by the Returning Veterans Project. That is at the East West College of the Healing Arts, 525 Northeast Oregon Street. That's going to be 12:30, 1:45, or 3 p.m. And I have phone numbers and an email for a contact list. And if you have a pen and you're interested in learning more about that, the phone number is 503-298-5213. That's 503 248-298-5213.
That's pretty good. I think that's wonderful to have that. Because you know that the Return of Veterans Project, we've had them on a couple of times, and they do just wonderful work. And, boy, they're just really good people. They have a good mental health program, too, and they can get people, get you into some mental health if you need it. And that's really good, especially PTSD. And Ralph Nader is going to be in Portland. Rally to get big money out of politics. And that's Saturday, October 22nd, at the First Unitarian Church. It's on the Main Street Sanctuary at 1211 Southwest Main Street here in Portland. And the doors open at 6 p.m. And they have a suggestion donation at the door. And, boy, it sounds like a great thing. Nobody turned away for lack of funds. The proceeds benefit Honest Elections, Multnomah County, which sounds like really a good idea. So we want to have folks show up to that. I think that's really good. And also, this is next month. The War Resisters League's going to be having a program at Peace House. And Peace House is at 2116 Northeast 8th Avenue here in Portland. And they're going to have a video that was a BBC documentary called Bitter Lake about the war in Afghanistan. And they're also going to have a speaker there, Seth Kirshner of Counter Recruitment and the Campaign to Demilitarize Public Schools. And I think Angie does that. She goes to that. And they also need volunteers to help pass out leaflets and information in front of the high schools here in Portland. And I've done that. We've done that for many, many years. And it's always a good way to meet people and talk to the young folk about what's going on and their options to going into the military, because as you all know, we've had a continual war going on since what, Angie, 1991?
I believe it was 1491.
1491.
92.
It's Columbus, Ellie, Orange, Blue. 1492.
Pretty much that's when it started.
Yeah. We've had a continual war. This country's been a continual war. But this latest thing is just horrible. And if you want some information on helping War Resisters League or going to the project at Peace House, you can get a hold of John Grushaw, and his email is JGRUESCEURO, I think it is, at comcast.net. I can't read my writing. Oh, no, it's, okay, JGRUESCHOW at comcast.net. I can't even read my own writing. So, but that's the how to get a hold of John for the, to if you want to help War Resisters League or you want to go to the, a program that they're having on November 15th. So also, Angie, I don't have the information. I don't know if you do, but I think they're showing Brian Wilson's movie tonight. Do you have any information?
I don't know about that.
It's at the Unitarian Church. It's at the Unitarian Church again at 7 p.m. tonight, and it is our good friend Brian Wilson's movie. And that I've known Brian for a long, long time, and it's the First Unitarian Church again at 1211 Southwest Main Street here in Portland, and I think it's pretty good. I've seen it, the film, and I'm gonna probably go see it again, and want to do that. We're still trying to get a hold of Sean, and we haven't got through to him yet. So I want to talk a little bit about you know, something has really been bothering me a lot, and that is this continual war that's going on in Afghanistan and Iraq and Syria. And I got some pictures sent to me not long ago about the people that are really, really being wounded, especially in Syria and in Aleppo right now. And boy, about 45 to 50% of all those people being wounded and killed are children. And that really, really is, you know, is such a sad state that, that these children are being, you know, I just can't imagine how these children are going to be after this mess is over with. Their mental health, their physical health, just their whole life is going to be just turned upside down by these wars. And like I was talking to Angie before, everything I read, everything I see, and things I talk to people about, and to me, it all leads right back to George W. Bush, you know. And when George W. Bush and Dick Cheney and that whole cabal attacked Iraq for no reason at all, that just opened the gate. And when that gate got opened, the monsters came out and the killing started. You know, we sent all these troops there. We sent, you know, these private contractors that are still there. They're still there, and they're still just killing people, and nothing seems to be getting changed. The U.S. is just putting in so much money that we could use here, you know, to help our folks. You know, I was talking to a guy one time, and I was complaining about all the money that's going out of this country into these war zones, and he really didn't have any really good comeback. And he said, "Well, it's jobs." He said, "It's jobs." And I asked him, "Well, jobs?" He says, "Oh yeah." He says, "You know, the military guys go into the and women go into the military, and they have these jobs, and they get all this great training and everything, and the arms people, they give jobs to all these people, and you know, that's all he could come up with, that it's jobs, Angie."
Well, it's that would be applicable if you're. Everyday job was to blow up bridges or something like that.
Yeah.
Or be able to take apart guns and put them back together, or be able to track aircraft or whatever it is. But actually, a lot of the jobs that are in the military are very specific to the military, and they're specific to military equipment. And I'll give you an example. I was a air traffic controller in the Navy, and it was a combat air traffic controller, and I had thousands of hours of flight time, and I thought, well, maybe when I was getting out, I thought, what is the possibility of maybe me being an air traffic controller in the civilian world? And so I did some research and made some phone calls, and I found out that not one single hour of the time that I spent in the military doing air traffic control actually related to the civilian world, because a lot of people would ask me, "Why don't you just go be an air traffic controller?" Well, I could have theoretically, but one of the things is that you go into the military and then you get out and you're starting back over again. So it's really hard. It's hard for me to believe when recruiters tell kids that you can go into the military and you can get whatever kind of training you want, and then you get out and you may or may not have PTSD or some kind of injury. And so
that's not And I remember that when I got out of the service, back in the 60s, that when we were getting our discharges from the military, there were right there police departments. There were police departments, and they were offering us jobs in different police departments right when we got back to Vietnam. And I know guys that took them. And, I don't think I'd want
that just sounds
a Vietnam veteran as a policeman, I'll tell you that, coming right out of combat. I don't think so. And, boy, that was just such a horrible thing. And also with the, you know, one of the things that these recruiters do, and they go into these schools, Angie can tell you, and they go into these schools and they promise all this stuff, college education and all of this stuff they're going to give you. You're going to get this training to be whatever you're going to be. And then when you get out, you can use that, and but you can't. But they tell you you can, and then these kids get out, and they come. These folks come back. They're not kids anymore. They come back wounded, mental health problems, get kicked out of the military. I can't tell you how many people I've talked to that got a bad discharge.
Well, do you remember when we had Scott Olson on?
Yeah.
And he actually got discharged for supposedly using drugs, and he never did.
Right.
So we remember that, and especially with the fact that that military people can't use marijuana, I would just put that out there that maybe that causes higher rates of alcoholism.
Good.
So
could. I talked to this guy, Angie. He was a I need the phone number. I don't have the phone number.
We have a call.
Do you have the phone number? Okay, just a sec. Go ahead.
So I guess we do have somebody that has called in. David, are you there?
Yeah. Hi.
Thanks. Hi. Hey, David. Good morning.
Good morning. Thanks. And, you know, you talk about how we got to change our society to get away from military. You know, they brainwash us and tell us we're the most peace-loving people in the world, when in fact we spend more on military weaponry than all countries combined in the history of mankind.
Yeah.
And
that's correct,
you know,
yeah.
You see how military pervades everywhere? Our sporting events, we got these jets flying over our parades,
mm-hmm.
You know, and the kids, we have kids in my daughter's third grade class with pictures of war machines hanging on the wall. And we honor the veterans, which... You know, I think the times when they were drafted, they were forced to go fight, and that was a terrible thing. And I think now when it's a voluntary military, I think I more pity them because they've been caught up into this fear and that everything else in the world is evil. And the last thing I'll just say is there's one really apt term of war. It's called the Forgotten War. We've been in there since 1950,
yeah.
And we're still – our military is very patient. Because we're still itching for a war with North Korea.
Yep.
And we've created that radical state. If in the U.S. and Pacific Northwest, if we had some foreign power, say Switzerland, come in and convert all the U.S. and to our Swiss way of living, well, there's going to be a radical element like maybe me huddled in the northwest corner of the U.S., and I'm going to refuse to fall under the subjugation of a foreign power.
Yeah.
And if it's after 6 years, I'm going to be really radicalized. And I'm going to want parity, and I'm going to want some weaponry that this invader has had for 6 years on my border. And we don't see that, but we radicalize the North Koreans. We make fun of how they look. We have a president who is okay with a picture, a movie, showing the assassination of a Korean leader. And we're just itching to go into that war. And I think it's we've built our society up so much that everyone thinks North Korea bad, evil, nuclear weapon. But we forget that we are the only people who have ever used a nuclear weapon. We are the only people. And how can we be the most just and peace-loving when we have that on our hands?
Can I ask you something back to what you, referring to what you just said a couple of minutes ago? You said that you have a daughter in school and she has flyers of military weaponry on the walls?
Well, it's like airplanes and aircraft carriers and... there's probably soldiers with guns. You know, I mean, they have an area where, you know, you honor your veterans. And, you know, that's a plausible, that's a good thing to do. But, again, we kind of get brainwashed into thinking it's okay and it's normal to have guns and it's normal to, every country is evil and we have to fight for our way of life because they're going to invade us.
Yeah. Well, we do live in a militarized society, and there is a term for what you're talking about, or what you've kind of talked about, is what's called the veteran mystique, which is in our society we glorify veterans in a way that they're all heroes and they're all warriors, and they should all be placed above and beyond in this big category of nationalistic, patriotic exceptionalism. And actually that's actually an advantage for anti-war veterans like Marvin and I, because when we pull out the veteran card and say, well, if we're either writing a letter to somebody or addressing somebody either in the press or trying to make a statement, it is a lot more difficult for people to unacknowledge what we have to say about war issues if we've actually been there.
Yeah.
But it is, we do have a veteran mystique in our country in which it's completely overblown, out of proportion. So
yeah. I agree with that. I think, like I said, the people who have been injured, it's a horrible thing for their families and the people who are forced to go fight it. But, you know, it's that mystique. I'm 60 years old. I've been through Vietnam. I've been to Vietnam, against Vietnam War, Korean War, all the Middle Eastern wars. And what the heck happened in Angola? Remember we were in Angola a while back? Mm-hmm. What the heck is, how could Angola be a threat?
Yeah.
And, you know, I would say I'm a peace veteran, and I stand up to people who may call me a coward because I'd go fight, but I'll fight for my family rights with a fork in my house if I have to.
Okay.
But, you know, this thing that we have to remember, in the American Revolution, it wasn't the military that was fighting against British. It was the non-militants, right? And this military thing, they'd be still in redcoats because they couldn't protest. Couldn't be. So,
yeah, you know, one thing we have to, you know, during that Revolutionary War, we need to really thank the French, because the French and the British were having some trouble, and they started fighting each other, and that's what caused the okay. We got another call, Sean, and we want to thank you for calling in, buddy.
Yeah,
and keep
you.
Up the good work. I just want to finish this before we take the next call. The French got into it with the British, and the Americans had the British on the ropes anyway, but they had to pull their troops back out of America, out of the colonies, to go and fight the French. So, you know, eat French fries, I guess. But they helped us
a lot. No problem. Got that covered.
Go ahead, our next call.
I guess we have another caller, Sean.
Yes, good morning, guys.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Hey, so I just happened to be tuning in and heard the mention about, I wanted to speak to the issue of recruitment straight out of, you know, military veterans into the police force.
Yes.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, and actually, I just wrote a letter not too long ago, right after the soldier in Dallas had murdered the Dallas policeman.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
And, of course, there's been quite a few of those, actually.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, Chalmers Johnson spoke to that to mm-hmm. a great degree in his book, The Sorrow's Empire.
Yep.
And one of the things is that they give these guys great incentives. I can't remember to what degree. I don't think it's a pass on a certain time of service in the military, but in terms of time you could have spent going to college and
mm-hmm.
so forth. Like, they'll pay for 2 years worth of college if you'll come into the police and so forth. But the shooter in Dallas is a great representative of the anger and the PTSD that they bring back.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the things that also is not thought about or talked about, and Chalmers mentions this in the book, is the rampant racism that's in the military.
Oh, it's just horrible.
So you've got these guys that put my letter, you know, who's a colored fella,
mm-hmm.
and you've got these guys who are treated unfairly. They're there serving their country, so to speak, and may very well have been treated unfairly in the military. And then they come back with a great deal of PTSD.
PTSD,
and
yeah.
Issues, and see their own country killing their own culture at will.
Yeah.
Now, what was your letter about?
Yeah.
It was about that very thing.
Okay.
That very thing.
Who did you write it to?
Here you ask these guys, and they go into the military. They're treated, let's just say,
less than human.
Right? And then they have to put up with the whole, violence of war.
Right.
So then they're lit out to deal with themselves on their own because there's major cutbacks on help to help them deal with any of this when they get back.
Mm-hmm.
And then they see their own culture
under attack.
The new Jim Crow.
Yep.
And then on top of that, part of my letter was that here you have Obama, who's black, going to the Dallas police to pay tribute to the dead officers.
You know, that bothered
me, too. But they
don't
do that when black victims of families and so forth are laid to waste on the streets of the country.
Yeah.
But they don't do the same for them.
Yeah, I had that problem,
yeah,
too.
I just wanted to finish, and that's this, because it really bothers me.
Yeah.
That, you know, they promote that on the front page.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And then Obama comes out and says, you know, we're not really as divided as they want us to believe, which is a bunch of crap.
Yeah, we're definitely done, you know. Thanks for your call, buddy.
Yeah,
I really
and if
appreciate
anybody,
it.
You know, I just got to recommend it. Still, if nobody has read The New Jim Crow by Michelle Alexander,
yep.
They really need to read it.
Okay, thank you.
Thanks,
thanks, buddy. Yeah, he brings up a really, really good point. And as I was coming in this morning, I heard where in New York City, a family called. Did you hear this? A family called 911 because their mother, I think mother or somebody, was having a mental health problem, and she'd been diagnosed, I believe, with schizophrenia, and she was just going, you know, having a hard time. And she was an African American, and they call 911, and the cops came. And here this poor woman was in her room. She had stripped all of her clothes off. She was in her room, and I think she had a fork or scissors or something. And I think she set the scissors down, and she picked up a bat, and they shot and killed her. Huh. She was like 66 years old, you know? And they said that the cop had been in trouble before on stuff, and they had that, what do you call that gun they got that can stun you?
The stun gun?
Yeah, stun gun or whatever. They didn't even use that. They shot this poor woman. They just shot her. And like Sean was saying, you know, these our black brothers and sisters around in this country are just under attack. They're just under attack. And I listened earlier on Democracy Now! When they were talking to the reporter from New York Times or something, and he's a member of Black Lives Matter and everything. And he really set it out. He just talked about it, and it just made a lot of sense. And he really, really made it sense, you know. And you know, in even in our town, in our town, you know, we've had trouble with the police shooting people in mental stress, you know. And then you got guys like Dan Handelman, you know, that's really works on the police issue and writes about it and goes to these meetings at the city hall and tries his hardest to get stuff done. And then what they did to these folks at city hall when they pushed them out of the city, called the cops in, and they pushed them out of city hall, and they sprayed them, you know, with pepper spray. And boy, that really, really angered me a lot, you know. And I was reading also where some people were complaining because they went and they blocked the MAX train or whatever, you know. What else are they going to do, you know? What else are they going to do? They have to get their point out, and the media is not covering their point. And another thing that really angers me, and that is – they always say protesters. You know, they always say these are protesters. They're citizens. They never call people citizens, and they are citizens. And they have no way of getting their word to the city or whatever. And as soon as they start doing that, they get nabbed protesters, and they're citizens. So that kind of angers me. So if you want to give us a call, call us at 503-231-8187, and we're just really not getting a hold of Sean Westmoreland in Standing Rock, because I'm pretty sure they don't have really good reception out there. And that's another one we could talk about, is what happening to our sisters and our brothers in that movement.
Well, one thing that we can do, since we haven't been able to get him on the phone, is we can talk about, we can tell you a little bit about him. And
yeah, go ahead. That's a great idea.
We can tell him, tell you about a really amazing documentary that's out. If you haven't seen it, it's called Drone. And it talks about it's pretty recently made, and it talks about drone warfare and some of the realities of that. And it's a really, really good documentary. It's just called Drone. That's it. Anyway, Sean, he is a former Air Force RF SATCOM technician, and he served in Kandahar Airfield, Afghanistan, as a drone technician who received data and radio pictures for manned and unmanned missions in Afghanistan. And after reading a report that his work had accomplished over 200 enemy kills, when he separated from the service, he decided to pursue some traveling, which is a pretty common thing for veterans to do when they get out, and also start some humanitarian work and war resisting work. And one of the things that he has been working on, and some other veterans have been working on, is some repercussions for a Yemeni man whose family was attacked during a drone strike. And they were all innocent civilians. They shouldn't have been killed. It was a wedding that they were that his family was at. One of his relatives was an imam that had just a couple days spoken out against Al-Qaeda, and the whole family was attacked. And amazingly enough, the Yemeni government handed them $100,000 in cash. $100,000 in cash, with wrapped up in $100. They're all $100 bills wrapped up in rubber bands, and they just dropped it off. Well, the family didn't accept it, and they want an apology. And so they're petitioning President Obama to give an actual apology to the family. So that's one of the things he's been working on, which is really, really amazing. And so basically, we have Creech Air Force Base, which is where we operate our drones from in the United States, and as well as Ramstein in Germany. So maybe we can get him again at another time.
Yeah.
So I guess we do have another caller. We can talk to this person. James, are you with us?
Yes.
Hi, good morning.
Good morning. I wanted to talk about what the gentleman was saying about the police and the brutality that's going on. You know, I have veteran family members, I have veteran friends who've all been highly critical of these situations where police have claimed that their lives were in danger. Because, see, I haven't served, so I don't know, but they tell me that that when they were in active duty, that they had like steps that they went through to assess threats, and that they had to take those steps before.
Right, the rules of engagement.
Yeah, rules of engagement. And they're just, And they comment on the fact that a lot of these police have, are not taking any real rules of engagement. They're just kind of shooting out of panic. And it seems that like a lot, the people who argue with the most are a lot of people who either they're either cop apologists mm-hmm. or they haven't served themselves, but they kind of feed into that nationalistic idea of what it means to be an American. And it's like, you know, you don't, people don't deserve to die simply because they're resisting authority.
Right.
And a lot of times they're not resisting authority. It's just that I think a lot of the reactions that the police officers have are very immediate.
Yeah.
They're not in a mind state to be thinking in a grounded way like many military people do when they're in a war zone. They're almost in a state of calm. I mean, I remember a couple times when I thought I was going to die on the boat by drills that I didn't know were actually fake. And it's really amazing how when you go through that training, you become so accustomed to just be able to handle that situation without freaking out. And I think another huge part of it is just what they were talking about on Democracy Now this morning earlier was the fact that so many of the of these calls that when somebody calls the police or they call 911 for help and it's a mental health issue, yeah. mm-hmm. that they're responding in a crime like threat like manner to these yeah. calls that should be addressed in a mental health way.
Right. And the yeah. police seem to have this them against us mentality. You know, it's everybody's against the police. They seem to have that where no matter what it is, it's always we, the citizens, are to be looked at as a problem. And I've noticed that,
another problem is that a lot of, and this goes for politicians as well, a lot of politicians and police don't actually live in the place that they are serving.
That's right.
So
yeah, that's very true.
Yeah.
My brother-in-law is a police officer. He works in Tigard, but he lives in Gresham.
Oh, really?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
What do you think the difference would be if you had to serve in the place that you lived?
I think the biggest difference would be that you would actually have relationships with the people in the community, because I think that's what's missing in a lot of cases, is that, you know, because people are afraid that if the police live in the communities they serve, that somehow they're going to be more targeted than they normally would if they didn't live there, which at least from what I've seen, doesn't seem to be the case. But I mean, more to the point, it's like, how do we expect to really, I mean, you look at Ferguson, a lot of the police who worked in Ferguson lived in the suburbs. So they had no idea about the types of things that went on in that part of town. So when they come in there, I mean, they have no connection to the community, no connection to the people.
Mm-hmm.
So,
go ahead.
I was going to say, I mean, you know, it's like people act like, you know, policing in that vein should be, you know, is normal, but there's a lot of communities that don't have the same type of policing. Like, I mean, you could look at, like, you know, upper middle, you know, the really upper echelon white communities.
Yeah, West Hills.
Like Hasidic Jewish communities.
Mm-hmm.
There's lots of places that don't have consistent police presence.
Right.
And, yeah, it's...
increases the chances of more lower working class neighborhoods to be targeted. And that's exactly what goes on, is instead of trolling around the West Hills, they're out in up by 82nd or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
And of course, if you're looking for something, then you're going to find it. And
yeah.
You know, if I'm sure that if you looked in some of the West Hills houses, you'd probably find some pretty interesting things as well. But they're not.
Yeah.
They have more of a padding.
Yeah.
From that kind of thing.
Well, we've got another call in.
Thank you for calling.
Oh, I want to thank you for calling. And he brought up. We're going to take another call. But I want to. He brought up a good point, Angie, too, the rules of engagement. When I was in Vietnam, there were complete areas that were called free fire zones, and there was no rules of engagement. If there was anybody in that area, they were an enemy, and we could do anything we wanted. There's nothing more dangerous than an 18, 19-year-old kid with a fully automatic M16 rifle in an area where you can shoot anybody you want and do anything you want. And that's what happened in Vietnam. It was a free fire zone. And there were quite a few guys that took advantage of that, you know.
Of course,
not everybody. And I was one of them, and I didn't like it at all. But that was one of the things that Vietnam was, the free fire zones. And that was really, really a problem. There was no rules of engagement. It was just do what you wanted.
And I feel like that's what's going on in the Middle East today.
Oh, I do too. And so we have another call, Angie.
So Eric is here. Good morning, Eric.
Hey, hi.
Hey.
Good morning.
I had kind of an informational call. In 1970, I was taken down to my draft physical, and I had filed as a conscientious objector and asked for alternative service. And my father was head of fish and game for the state of California, and I knew the Sierras like the back of my hand. I said, why don't you let me go up and do trail maintenance and firefighting? They said, fine. I was all signed up for that, and then they had that big lottery. Everybody between 17 and 26 put in a fishbowl.
Mm-hmm.
You went by your birthday.
Well, right.
That year, they only took up to number 120, and I got number 352, and I went down to my CO, my draft board, and told them, hey, when are you going to send me to the mountains? And they said, get out of here, you communist.
Really?
Yeah.
Wow.
Wow.
But, I mean, I was signed up for it, and they've never recognized it since then.
Wow. That's really interesting story.
What's wrong with being a communist?
Yeah.
I guess they figured CO meant communist.
Oh boy.
Oh man. Thanks for the call. That's very interesting. Right. Thanks a lot. That's great. I never heard of that. But before they had the lottery, when you turned 18, you had, I think you could go down a month before your 18th birthday, and then you had a month after your 18th birthday that you had to sign up for the draft. And if you didn't sign up in that 30-day period after your birthday, you were automatically drafted.
Wow.
Yeah. And they had so many ways that people could get out of the draft.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, there was many
I'm
ways.
I'm pretty sure that Trump knows a few of those ways.
Oh, boy.
It's interesting because with the Selective Service now, if you don't sign up for the Selective Service, you can't actually get any Pell Grants.
Federal benefits.
You can't actually use any federal funding.
Right. You know, that makes me so angry. You know, I don't have any trouble with folks not going into the service or people that resisted the war in Vietnam, went to Canada. I have no problem with that.
Hey.
I do not have a problem with that. What I have a problem with is these guys, and it's always guys who are my age that got all these deferments, you know, all these medical deferments. They got college deferments and all that, and they didn't go. Like I said, I don't have a problem with that. I have a problem with these guys like George W. Bush, Dick Cheney, Donald Trump, and all these guys that could have went to Vietnam. They didn't go, and now they want to send others to war.
Well,
I have a hard time with that.
And
these guys go. And, you know, the things they got their deferments for, you know, bad foot or some, a boil on the behind.
Have you heard, Marvin?
Or whatever.
Have you heard that Trump said that veterans with PTSD are just weak?
Yeah, I heard that. But, you know, I knew guys in Vietnam that had bad feet, that had sores on their bodies and all this, and they were in Vietnam. You know, it's these rich kids that didn't go to Vietnam.
And, exactly, and that's why it's a poverty draft.
It was a poverty draft, and these guys didn't go to Vietnam. And then when this guy, some poor kid, some poor guy my age, goes up to Trump and gives him his Purple Heart, you know, because Trump said, you know, he'd like to have a Purple Heart and all that. And this poor kid, my age, goes up and gives him his Purple Heart.
Wow.
I felt so sorry for that kid, that guy, that he would do that. And then Trump comes out right after that and says, you know, these guys with PTSD are weak and all this. And that guy had PTSD. There's just no doubt about it. You know, he says things like that. And just so angry. And he wants to send guys and women to their death in a war. He doesn't have that right.
Well, it's certainly an interesting time.
Oh, he doesn't have that right. And that, yeah, I'm just so angry about that. You know, angry, you know, that he talks about veterans, us veterans like that. It's just horrible. So if you want to give us a call, if you have something you want to talk about, give us a call at 503-231-8187. And Angie, especially, we've talked a little bit about this. And, you know, with what's going on now with that guy, you know, having sexually assaulted women, and he's denying it. But, you know, all these women are coming out and saying the same thing about what he did. And he's just, like, blowing it off. But all those women that came up on Bill Cosby about what he did, everybody believes that, you know?
Well, I think it's interesting, too, that people downplay some of the things that Trump has supposedly, that he has assaulted women. And a lot of the conservative folks will say, well, everybody talks like that, or people, he may have done that once, but oh well. But do you remember the arguments that people were having about trans people using
the bathrooms?
Yeah. And that, oh boy, they can't do that because somebody might get groped or might get assaulted and might have it happen. But we know we now know that in Trump's case, it actually has happened. So that's just a little oxymoron.
Yeah, it you know. And then his wife comes out and says all this stuff. And then she said something. And as soon as she said it, my phone rang, man. It was my brother. And he said, did you hear that? And she said it was a boy talk. When he did that, it was boy talk. He was 59 years old. That's not a boy. You know? That is not a boy.
Yeah.
And he does that. And I saw this. Some of those right-wing people, I saw a woman wearing a T-shirt that says, Trump can grab me.
Really?
Yeah.
Well, they can wear that away from me.
Yeah, me too.
Very far.
I didn't like that at all. And, you know, the things... Angie, go ahead.
Did you know that we can easily be put on a terrorist watch list so easily? Did you know that the U.S. government has a database of 469,000 people?
On what?
469,000 people were nominated in 2013. This is American citizens. And this can happen just for one Facebook or Twitter post. That in 2013, 469,000 American citizens were nominated to be on the terrorist watch list, and only 4,900 were rejected.
Wow.
And so this leads back to the subject that we'll end up getting back to this drone subject again, because it's something that we're going to be covering. But that is exactly how one innocent 16-year-old American citizen was killed by a drone strike.
Right. Right.
So by being put on this watch list, and again, that can be done just by one single thing that you say online, and you can be on this terrorist watch list. And that's why it's so important that we're going to be covering this again, the drone strikes. And actually, the budget for drones has been increasing by quite a bit, and so it's really something that we're going to be talking about again.
You know, remember when those folks took over the Malheur?
Yeah, I do.
Thing and
they won't quit talking about it.
Oh, geez,
it's annoying.
I'm so sick. But when that one guy, when they set up that roadblock and all that happened, and they were showing really fast, they had the pictures. Remember of the pictures of that guy getting out and going
right.
for his gun and all that. My brother, the phone rang real fast, and my brother said, "It's a drone."
Yeah.
He said, "That's a drone.
And
that's not a helicopter taking a
right.
picture." He said, "That's a drone."
Yeah.
So they were using drones here in Oregon.
Well, yeah, and I actually, I've seen some pretty interesting drones. I saw one just driving down the street
really?
At night. Yeah. And it was kind of weird. It was kind of troubling, but it was probably like a several thousand dollar drone. But those aren't the types of drones that we're really talking about.
No, we're talking about military drones.
And it's really troubling, because I had mentioned that I was going to be talking about the subject, or that we were going to have a guest on. We'll get him back again at another time.
Right.
He is going to be talking about the fact that so many civilians are killed during the drone strikes.
Mm-hmm.
We're shooting in Afghanistan and Yemen and Somalia and Iraq, Pakistan. We have unmanned drones in all these areas.
And now Africa.
And there are kids.
Africa.
Yeah. And there are children that actually, they don't even want to go outside anymore during the day, because that's during the day when it's nice outside, because that's when the drones fly. The only time that they can actually go out is when it's cloudy outside, because
right.
that's when the drones don't fly.
They can fly at night because they have that
infrared. There was a grandmother, and this is, again, if you hadn't heard me say this before, watch the documentary Drone. It's really good. And in that documentary, there is a family that it was a grandmother picking okra in a field.
I remember.
And her two grandchildren were out helping her, and a drone killed her.
I remember that.
And so we need to be thinking about this and about all the money that's going towards that, and how it actually causes radicalization to happen.
Right.
And it's. I don't want to hear the argument that it's not a perfect science. It's a terrible way to deal with us with and make a situation worse.
Yeah, we'll be back on November 18th at 9 a.m. And today is my birthday.
Oh, happy birthday!
It's my 68th birthday.
Happy birthday, Marvin!
Thank you.
You mean your 35th?
Hey, my 35th birthday. Like I said, we'll be back on November 18th at 9 a.m., and there it is.
KBOO Community Radio is proud to co-sponsor the Best Democracy Money Can Buy Wednesday, October 26th, 5 p.m. at the Clinton Street Theater in Portland. The Best Democracy Money Can Buy is a documentary film featuring Greg Palast and Lenny Bad Penny as they look into Operation Crosscheck, analyze the data, and find some of the 7.2 million Americans whose votes are threatened this November.
This is Greg Palast, Rolling Stone investigative reporter. I go on the hunt for the big fix that could steal the 2016 election, and I hunt down the billionaires behind the scam.
Again, that's the Best Democracy Money Can Buy, Wednesday, October 26th, 5 p.m. at the Clinton Street Theater, 2522 Southeast Clinton Street in Portland. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right-hand side of the homepage under Community Events.
KBOO Community Radio is a proud co-sponsor of the Portland Underground Grad School. Classes that begin in November include What's the Buzz About Bees, Criminal Law, Rewilding 201, and more. Portland Underground Grad School is also known as PUGS. Classes take place all over the Portland metro area. Information about registering, teaching classes, and more can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.